should probably say.
Okay. Good morning. We're in the middle of Perek Yud Aleph of the Guras Hashem, chapter 11, and what we started on it. We were dealing with in the first part last time. We were talking about how Klal Yisrael ended up going down to Golus. If you remember, at the end of Perek Yud, so he went back to the idea after discussing the causes for Golus, and he went back to again further clarify that Yosef's sale by his brothers and everything which came and developed from that was not the cause for the Golus. It was just the way the Golus Gezeira, the decree of Golus, which came for other reasons, the way it came to pass. And so what we spent the time on last week was talking about this idea that Chazal say that, you know, the truth is we could have been schlepped down to the Golus, you know, in chains, right? Ruuyin, it would have been worthy in order to fulfill the Gzeira. But instead of schlepping us with chains, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did was he brought us down in a way which was with dignity. He said, the Gemara says, a mushal to a cow that they want to take to be slaughtered, and the cow has a sense of resistance to going to the makailin, to the area of the marketplace where the slaughtering takes place. So what do? They send the child ahead, and the mother's mothering instinct takes it to follow the child. It'll go after it no matter what. So also HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Yosef to Mitzrayim so that Yaakov Avinu will go after him. And he says, Vayiris HaShechina leMitzrayim imay, and he sent the Shechina down to Mitzrayim with him. So again, on the one hand, we have this idea that it was done in a manner which was dignified and positive, despite the fact that there was an inherent sense that they shouldn't be going down to Mitzrayim. And we have the yira that the pasuk describes of Yaakov, you know, going down to Mitzrayim, and you know the awareness that there was a gzeira that he would presumably be trying to avoid going down to Mitzrayim, but he did go down to follow Yosef. And the way the Maral learned was that, number one, again, there's the element of the dignity, that he didn't get schlepped, like the cow didn't have to get schlepped. And number two was that that it was clear this way, that it was a gzeira min Hashem Yisborach, it was a gzeira from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. And we talked about the fact that the whole story of Yosef, with all of the clear hashgacha, all of the clear divine providence that's part of the story of bringing him down to Mitzrayim, makes it clear that the descent to Mitzrayim is also part of the hashgacha, is also part of the whole divine plan, you know, to make this happen. So what we're going to focus on here today is the next part of what the Maral deals with here in this parak, which is that why is it that Yosef is the one through whom this whole event needs to happen? Why is it all happening through Yosef? I'm not sure if we began discussing part of it last time or not, but we're going to talk about it a little bit more. That's going to be phase one, and phase two is going to be the seder, the order of things, of how Yosef was taken down to Mitzrayim in the sale, that whole sequence, that whole confusing sequence which the pasuk describes, of whether they sold him to the Ishmaelim or to the Midyanim. The Maral has a very creative approach, which he says here, which he says a little bit more limited version of it in the Gvuras Hashem over there in Chumash, on these ideas. So let's start with the beginning. In the Gur Ari, excuse me, on Chumash. The beginning is that why Dafka? Why specifically is it Yosef? Is Yosef the one who should emerge here as the ruler over Mitzrayim that begins the process of the Golus Geula? So the Maral says that, remember, what is the dominant characteristic of Mitzrayim? The dominant characteristic of Mitzrayim, as we see from the days of Avraham Avinu's original Yerida, his original going down to Mitzrayim, was that Mitzrayim are Shtufei Zima. they are completely overwhelmingly involved in immorality. And we refer to the Mitzrim as Besar Chamoyrim, Besaram, Vezirma Susim, Zirmasam, to the extent of their being so overwhelmed by it that their flesh is considered to be like the flesh of the Chamoyrim, of the donkey. And the idea being, as we know and we've discussed many times, as Maral discusses, is that the donkey, in a sense, is the ultimate example of the animal, because chamer is chamer, right, is physicality, it's pure physicality without the spiritual component. When the Gemara speaks about the contrast between generations, speaks about the original ones like angels, and the next like people, and we are like donkeys. The angel is pure spirituality, the donkey represents chamer, pure physicality. The people in the middle, the mix between physicality and spirituality. And Mitzrayim was Chaimer, and to the expression of how full they were of Chaimer, of physicality was in their Shtufei Zima, in their overwhelming absorption in physicality and immorality. That's something which we know from the earliest, from the original sin of Adam HaRishon, is that that's where the physicality of a human being is going to be expressed in its strongest way. And Yosef HaTzadik stands in tremendous contrast to that. The action which Yosef did in his life, which is definitive, which in fact, what do we call him? We call him Yosef HaTzadik. He's called Yosef HaTzadik because of one story, and that's the story of Eishes Potiphar, the resistance which Yosef showed when it was attempted that he be seduced by the wife of Potiphar. And Yosef's resistance to that defines him as Yosef HaTzadik. Right, in the Midas, what we speak about of the seven Midas that exist in the Sfirah, so there's the Midah, the characteristic of Yesod, which is associated with Yosef HaTzadik, Tzadik, Yesod, Olam, and the Midah of Yesod is about purity, specifically about focused on purity, Shmiras, what's called Shmiras HaBris, maintenance of the purity of the Bris. And that was how Yosef distinguished himself in Mitzrayim. And you have to see this for the richness of what the Torah is doing here, of what the Rabbanu Shem did here in the Gilgul HaSibos as Klal Yisrael is going down to Mitzrayim. See, Avraham Avinu went down to Mitzrayim. We don't know exactly how long Avraham Avinu spent in Mitzrayim. How long was Avraham Avinu in Mitzrayim? Right? Was he there overnight? Right? If you read the story in the Chumash, it could be that he was only there overnight. Right? As he was there, he showed up, they took Sarah to the house of Parai, and, you know, that night, you know, this problem emerged. And then the next morning, you know, Parai gets up, and he's upset, and he's not feeling well, and he blames it on this, correctly, and he sends Avraham Avinu away from Mitzrayim. Avraham Avinu had a visit in Mitzrayim. In that visit in Mitzrayim, Sarah was taken as an expression of how awash in immorality Mitzrayim was, and Avraham Avinu gets sent away from Mitzrayim by Parai because he says, you don't want to be here because this place, everybody here are Shtufei Zima, and they're going to do not nice things to your wife. So Avraham Avinu, who of course is the original Baal Bris Hamila, when at a Bris you say, Lachnisa Bebrisa Shal Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is the original one to maintain purity, to establish, I should say, purity in this realm. Avraham Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim, but doesn't really even stay in Mitzrayim. He leaves Mitzrayim because of it. Avraham Avinu has to separate from Lot, who went down to the same Mitzrayim, but Lot got infected by the virus of Shtufei Zima in Mitzrayim. And that's why, unfortunately, Lot's perpetuity, Lot's infamy is Lot's two daughters. Right? When we speak about it, when they went to Amanu Mayav to offer the Torah, that was where they said Leisinaf, right? When they said to Amanu Mayav, do you want the Torah? They said, what does it say in it? So they said, it says to them, he said, it says, you shall not commit adultery. So Avraham Avinu said, what are you talking about? We were conceived in adultery. We were conceived in immorality. Of course we can't accept a Torah like that. Because Lot went down to Mitzrayim. And then when he couldn't stay with Avraham Avinu because he was infected by what happened to him by what he experienced in Mitzrayim, so he chose to live in Sodom, which is Keretz Mitzrayim, the Pasuk says, which Sodom is of course also characterized by exactly the same thing. Rashi writes there, he brings what the Gemara says in two places, Lefi Shahayu Shtufei Zima Bachar Loi Lot Bishchunasam, because they were awash in Zima, exactly like Mitzrayim, that's why Lot chose to live there. That was the failure of someone going down to Mitzrayim. Now again, we don't know, maybe they were there for a day. But Yosef was going to be in Mitzrayim by himself for how long? Right? Yosef was in Mitzrayim by himself for 20 years. Right? What's Yosef going to do in Mitzrayim? So Yosef, in order to be in Mitzrayim, but not be influenced by Mitzrayim, Yosef, in order to be in Mitzrayim and to be the Melech, to be the king of Mitzrayim, instead of just being absorbed and being a slave to Mitzrayim and to everything to which Mitzrayim was enslaved, quote unquote, Yosef had to have his mettle tested specifically in Shtufei Zima. Only if he would be able to pass the Shtufei Zima test, the immorality test, would Yosef be able to be the one to lead the Jewish people to be in Mitzrayim. Because if we lose that, then we really lost our ability to be in Mitzrayim, to be able to have and to develop at any time any kind of a control, any type of a mastery there in Mitzrayim. That's why this is that original test of Yosef HaTzadik. That's why it's specifically Yosef HaTzadik who has to be able to who plays this role. The Yosef HaYakadosh v'nivdal min harayis kasher tira mimasa Peitifar. Maral says Yosef was holy and separate from immorality, as you see from the story of Peitifar. Ubishvil kach lehaya nasa Yosef melech el al yidei masa shalei eishas Peitifar kach yira. He says that's why Yosef became the king of Mitzrayim, through causes which traced themselves back to the story of Eishas Peitifar and his resistance of Eishas Peitifar. Right? That was all cause and effect. So he gets thrown into jail, where he, from there, he meets the Sara Mashkim, the Sara Eifim, and he has the opportunity to ascend to greatness in Mitzrayim. Why? Because you can be the king of Mitzrayim when you're not enslaved to that which enslaves the Egyptians. That's the idea. And the Maral goes on, and he speaks in a little bit of a broader sense about this idea. And he says that haporetz barayis umimaisa chaymer kasher yisboyer, one who is overtaken by immorality, that's where the physicality is controlling, as has been explained. The hanivdal hakadosh min arayis hu kadosh min apchisas chaymer hamaguna hazeh, and one who is separate from that is beyond that, and therefore hu bevaday daime litzura she'ein ba min inyan hachaymer. Litzura is form, as opposed to chaymer, which is matter. When we speak about form versus matter, we could use our term, which is mind over matter. Form is representative of a seichel that defines it for a specific valuable purpose. Right? We go back always to our most basic illustration of chaymer and tzura. Chaymer is the ball of clay. And tzura is when you take the ball of clay and you shape it into a bowl or into a cup or into a flower or into whatever it is that you want to, what you want to shape it into. As the ball of clay, it's just raw matter, raw physical substance. However, when you form it, you're then putting on it a specific shape and a specific purpose. You say, I have something I want to use this for. This is what I would like to use it for. And I define its shape in order to be able to match that purpose. That's mind over matter. That's mind directing, controlling, shaping the matter in the way that you want it to be able to go. the idea of the person being shot of bezima, drawn after immorality, is not mindful. It's losing to some degree the mindfulness and the ability to choose properly. And the triumph over it, the one who's controlling is, you know, thinking, deciding, choosing where to engage, instead of just being cold and following, you know, just, you know, the flow of where physicality draws them. That's the idea of a melech. Says the Maharal, that's the idea of a melech. A melech to his people is considered to be the tzura to the chaimer of the nation. The nation is raw talent, raw material, all kinds of people. But a kingdom, a country, is supposed to have a direction. It's supposed to have a purpose. It's supposed to have a form. It's the melech, the king, it's his job to define the goals, the mandates, the things which are to bring the people together for a specific purpose. Tzura is supposed to be melech over chaimer, right? The direction is supposed to define the matter, not the matter define the direction. And so the positioning of Yosef in this realm is for that specific purpose. The positioning of Yosef in that realm is for that specific purpose. If you remember when we learned the Nesiv HaTshuva, right in the beginning of the Nesiv HaTshuva, the first principle which the Maharal says over there of Tshuva is the principle of mind over matter. That Chet originates from, like we had in the Parsha 2 weeks ago, in Parshas Nasai, by Parshas Saita, by the Parsha of immorality. Saita is related to the word shaita, right? It's spelled not with a samach, but with a sin in the Torah. Ish ish ki siste ishtai, the verb, right? The Masechta is spelled with a samach, right? But the verb is with a sin. And Chazal say, because ein adam chaita elim ke nichnas bay ruach shtus, a person only sins if they're gripped by some kind of insanity, some kind of temporary insanity, which means their mind isn't deciding to do this. Their stomach is deciding to do it, or their midsection is deciding to do it, or whatever it is, whatever physical part of themselves is deciding to do it. And so the beginning, how do we say in Shemona Esrei? The first thing we say is Atachainin La'adam Da'as, and then we say Hashiveinu Avinu L'Sayra Secha. Because the prelude to tshuva is to think, to be able to stop, to think, and to grab control over these basic urges which can drive us otherwise. That's the melech. That's the king. That's the power of the melech, is that the melech is supposed to define and direct, govern, right? Decide over the actions that the person does. That's the basic idea which the Maharal says here. So Yosef proves what he's made out of by the story of Eishes Potiphar. That's necessary in general to be a king. It's especially necessary to be the king over Mitzrayim, where the driving issue in Mitzrayim is this physicality with the associated sexual urges. And Yosef overcomes that, and that positions him to be the melech over Mitzrayim, to be the king over Mitzrayim, and therefore to be the sort of the leader, the one who's the shalach lefanav, the one who goes ahead to lead the Jewish people into the very murky waters of Mitzrayim, from which they will have to emerge with purity. Right? We learned before already about Yisrael versus Mitzrayim, the purity of Yisrael versus the impurity of Mitzrayim, that contrast is supposed to be there. The Maharal just goes on here and develops a little bit, and he says, but you know, Yosef didn't become king right away. He went to Mitzrayim and he was there for a while. He was there for a while before he became king. He got to Mitzrayim when he was 17 years old, and he didn't stand before Paray until he was 30 years old, right? And then, he would be in Mitzrayim another 9 years, right? A total of 22 years. Right before Yaakov Avinu would come down, but it took him 13 years to become the king of Mitzrayim. And he says Maral, likewise, Kol Yisrael went through a process where we were in Mitzrayim and we were subject before we ruled over Mitzrayim for an awful long time. He says, because how does a human being develop? When a child is born, there's one thing which controls, physicality. That's all. A baby looks sweet and innocent, but not at 2 o'clock in the morning. When it doesn't say, you know, mommy's a little tired, I shouldn't cry. I could just get by for another couple of hours without a feeding. Right? The child is just physicality, just thinks about them, about their physical self. That's all that they're, that's their entire circle, that's their entire frame of reference. And growth we call development into a ben das. Right? Bar mitzvah, bas mitzvah coincides with a person developing what we call das. Das means that you think, you don't just do. And that's maturity. And that's, as Chaimer is strongest in the beginning, Tzura, das, grows up over time. And so says the Maral, don't expect Yosef right away to be a melech. Right? It's a process. Development of this das, development of this is something which comes over time. The Nisayon with Eishes Potiphar was not right away. It was not his first day on the job. It was not his first day on the job. I mean, you know, he was we don't know exactly the chronology of when he went into jail, but
he was in jail, so it was before the jail. It wasn't
the first year.
Right away.
If he was 13 years before he became viceroy, right? 17 to 30.
Where does it say that he was 12 years in jail?
Well, if he was 17 when he arrived in...
he was 12 years in jail.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, so it is. I'm Ron Britton. I'm in charge of that. Elementary and high school.
Okay. I don't know, it must be a chazal, but that's it. Okay. So that's phase one, the parallel which he drives. Questions, comments?
Did Yosef have any positive influence on the mitzvah?
Yes. Yes. So that, I'm sorry. And that's why you find that when Yosef was in the position of power, what did he try to do? What did he do? He wanted to give him bris milah. He gave him bris milah. Remember that when they needed the food, they went to Parah, they said, give us food. He said, why are you coming to me? Go to Yosef. You know Yosef's one who has the food. They said, we went to Yosef. Yosef said, he'll give us food if we have a bris. Right? Parah said, listen to him. Listen to him. So that's the idea. The bris is called cherpas. The oral is called cherpas Mitzrayim, right? Mitzrayim is the immorality. It's the opposite of the bris, and that was what Yosef was trying to bring to Mitzrayim. When he controlled, he tried to cure them to some degree of that element of immorality that was within.
Well, also later on, I think that's why when going out of Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf was with Ashkenaz Yosef.
Yamataiva.
Is Chomer without any Tzura, and he is the picture of Tzura, and his Dafka, his Chomer was the Koach that led their way to break the
Golden
City.
Yeah. Chomer,
the Muhammad of Tzura, Kenegi Chomer.
Yeah. Good.
Well, same
mandorma. Yeah.
I wonder what the connection, if there's a connection with David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech in this area, the Melech.
I think that that's very valid. I think that that's very valid. You know, it's the Chazal say famously on the pasuk that says Motzasi David Avdi, I found David my servant. Where did I find him? Heichan Matzasiv B'Sedaim. I found him in Sedaim. What does that mean? I found him in Sedaim because in Sedaim is where Light conceives with his daughters, or as a result of Sedaim, Shnei Benaisav Hanimtzais. That's what the part of the drasha, and that came from there. David HaMelech came from there. Now David HaMelech is all, you know, everything which from which the Malchus emerges has these sort of like traces of immorality that surround them, and there are many elements to that, to the aramitai hachayshach, to the light which emerges from the darkness, from Yehuda and Tamar, from Benais Light, from Ruz and Bayaz, from David and Basheva, right? All of these things together are all, you know, part of this thing, and it's fair to say that an element of it is that real Malchus is Malchus over the Chaimer, over the physicality, and so therefore that's part of where that challenge has to be.
Does the confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef and have tie in with this thing, what Yehuda had gone through and now what Yosef had gone through?
There's very much of a correlation between them. There's a big difference between Yehuda and Yosef, and it's subject for a discussion for itself, in that both Yehuda and Yosef, they both ascended to Malchus, and this is part of the thing with David HaMelech, except the difference between Yehuda and Yosef is that Yosef didn't sin, Yehuda did sin, and he did Shuvah. Yehuda said, Tzadka Mimeni, right? Yehuda is the original public Shuvah. He did, quote-unquote, fail in the story of Tamar. But then, it was Mizvada. David HaMelech sinned with Basheva. But then he owned it, right? When Nasan HaNavi came to him, so what did he say? One word, Chatasi. No ifs, no ands, no buts, no excuse, no blame, nothing. He just owned it. So there's a contrast between Yosef, whose power is in averting sin, and Yehuda, whose power is in confronting sin. In other words, the sin was done, and he's able to do tshuva. It's a chiluk between the two of them, and it requires a discussion, a greater discussion for itself. But both of them are confronting the same sin. They're both, dealing with the same sin. This area, which helps us to be able to understand its relationship to Malchus.
Later in the story, the Yidden stay pure while they're in Egypt the whole time. What is the Mentes Shari Tuma? That's not related at all.
Well, it's a good question, and it's a good question. It's a Pela Gedayla Ad Ma'od. It's an amazing thing how the Jewish people stayed pure in Mitzrayim. It's an amazing thing how the women of Klal Yisrael stayed pure. You know, the fact that Sarah was protected was the harbinger of that. And of course, we'll have that testified to in a couple of weeks in the Parsha, in Parshas Pinchas, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's maid testifies that every woman's children were from her husband. Right? That's Haru Veini, Eidus LiYisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu testifies. People said, how could that be? How could that be that the women weren't taken advantage of? Well, we understand that that was absolute, that they did not. Only one woman of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim was with a Mitzri, and that was Shlomis Bas Divri, and the Torah tells us about her. But other than that, a perfect record, which is an amazing thing. It's not as clearly testified about the men. And remember that one of the things which was lost in Mitzrayim was Bris Milah. That's Cherpas Mitzrayim. The shame of Mitzrayim was that we lost the Bris Milah. So it's not as clearly testified. And exactly, therefore, what with this Mem Teshari Tumah, which we all know about, the 49 gates of Tumah that we got swallowed up in Mitzrayim, exactly how that expressed itself in physical actions, not perfectly clear.
Avodah
Zara for sure. Avodah Zara for sure. Yes. Halal arrived. Avodah Zara arrived. We got involved in Avodah Zara. But was there again this absolute purity in this realm? Again, it's just not as clear whether there was absolute purity in this realm for the men as well. Again, lacking the Bris Milah is a big deal. It's a big piece of the puzzle. Okay. Now, the Maral goes on here in this next phase to speak about how Yosef went down to Mitzrayim. And the psukim are a little confusing.
Present the complicated picture. What do the
psukim say? Vayishvu lechol lechem, they sat down to eat bread. Vayisu einehem, and they lifted up their eyes. Vayiru, and they saw v'nei archas Yishmaelim bo migilad. There was a caravan of Yishmaelim coming from Gilad, and their camels were carrying whatever to take down to Mitzrayim. So Yehuda proposes that they should sell him to the Yishmaelim instead of extending a hand against him. So what happened was people who were Midyanim, men who were Midyanim, Seicharim. Okay, hear what it says? Midyanim, not Yishmaelim. Seicharim, Seicharim is merchants. And they went and they drew Yosef from the bar and they sold Yosef to the Yishmaelim for 20 kesef and they brought Yosef to Mitzrayim. And later the pasuk says, after the whole thing, it says, and the Midanim, which is like Midyanim presumably, sold him to Mitzrayim. So what's going on over here? What's going on? Yishmaelim, Midyanim, Seicharim. Like, who had it? It's a very confusing thing, and there's a lot of discussion about this matter, about exactly who did what, in this story. Rashi says that when it says Anyanim Midyanim Seichem is Zuhi Shayora Acheres, VeYachal Kosuv Shanim Karpamim Harbe. It's a different group, and the Torah is telling you that he was sold, flipped, many times. Yes, it was sold from one to another, but Rashi doesn't go through it so much. He says, "Vayimshuchu bnei Yaakov es Yosef min habar vayimkru liYishmaelim, vayishmaelim lemidyanim, vamidyanim lemitzrayim." So he says the brothers pulled him from the bar, they sold him to Yishmaelim, Yishmaelim sold him to Midyanim, and the Midyanim sold him to Mitzrayim. That's the way Rashi presents the sequence. Others have different versions. Others have that one group was the ones who drew him out, another group sold him, and so on. We'll see. The Maharal is going to bring a specific medrash. The two opinions of the medrash are a little different. There are Rishonim who blur the whole thing, and they say it's all one group, Lefi Pshutai, and Midyanim and Yishmaelim are interchangeable titles for the people because they are all the descendants of Hagar / Keturah. They're all the descendants of Hagar / Keturah. Yishmael was born from Avram and Hagar, and then when Sarah died, he took a woman named Keturah, which Chazal tell us was Hagar, and one of the children of Hagar was Midyan. So they're both sort of from one big family. And therefore, many of the Rishonim blur the distinction in terms of Pshutei Shel Mikra, and they bring proofs from other places where these terms or these names, family names, are interplay. But however, what Rashi brings briefly, ever so briefly, is found in the Medrash. And the Medrash sees that there was a number of sales that took place here. And the Maral brings the Medrash from Bereshis Rabbah that a Midyanim Machru Eisai, he says, Kama Oinias Nichtavu Olav. How many deeds, how many contracts of sale were written over Yosef HaTzadik? Rav Yudin Omer Arba. Rav Yudin says there were four different contracts that were written. The brothers sold them to the Yishmaelim. The Yishmaelim sold them to the Seicharim, to the merchants. The Seicharim sold them to Midyanim, and the Midyanim sold them to Mitzrayim. So the Jews to the Yishmaelim to the merchants to the Midyanim, and the Midyanim to Mitzrayim. Rav Huna added Chamesh, there were five. Because Midyanim didn't sell them right to Paitifar. Machru Eisei L'dums, the Musaya Shel Medina. He sold it sort of to the government. And then the government, right, Paitifar got him, was one of the government at a government auction. Right, that was the way it went. So there were actually five steps. What's being spoken about here? What are these four steps, five steps? So the Maral has first a core insight, which is a brilliant, pashut, simple insight that guides the first four steps. And that insight is as follows. Yosef was going from the Jewish people and being sent down to Mitzrayim. When you have a bridge between two places, right? Remember the prisoner exchanges between East and West, right? In the bad old days, right? So, they went on the bridge, they went halfway, right? This half of the bridge, right? You build a bridge. Half of it is from this one and half of it is from that one. Yosef, so to speak, had to cross a bridge from Yisrael to Mitzrayim. What would be a bridge between Yisrael and Mitzrayim? the children of Hagar would be a bridge between Israel and Mitzrayim. Why? Because Avraham Avinu, when he went down to Mitzrayim, he came back with a Shivcha Mitzris. Sarah came back with a Shivcha Mitzris with an Egyptian maidservant who was Hagar. And when Avram married Hagar, the descendants were, like Ishmael, were part Abrahamic and part Egyptian, part Bnei Avram, part Mitzrayim. So when Yosef is going and traversing this Ma'avar, this passage, this bridge from being within the Bnei Yisrael to going to Mitzrayim, the most comfortable bridge means to, for him to traverse that is through someone who brings together Yisrael and Mitzrayim. Right? Isn't that by itself just nice, nice, clean? Isn't that like beautiful? Just plain and simple. Okay, but that's one step. So Amaral just
like
builds on it, huh?
To get it to go down, you have to go different levels, from
being amongst the Israel to being amongst the Mitzrayim, the bridge, the Gesher is a combination of Israel and Mitzrayim. But why all the steps? So that it's a, you know, when a person goes from outer space into the atmosphere, right? They have to, yeah, you know, you have to have the different stages of acclimation, right? Decompression, whatever it's called. So
the new environment is slowly but surely connected.
Right. So, but now, what about all these details? So he says. So he just takes it a step beautifully. So let's first look at the bookends. Right, you have Yishmael, the Shvatim to Yishmael, Yishmael to the Seichrim. We'll leave that, and then Seichrim to Midianim. The ones that are named in the pasuk is Yishmael, Midianim, them to Mitzrayim. So as we said before, both Yishmael and Midian are children of Avram Avinu and Hagar. What's the difference between them? Yishmael is much more of a child of Avram than Midian is a child of Avram. Why do you say that? I mean, the same amount of chromosomes went into Yishmael as went into Midian from Avram Avinu. But when Avram Avinu had Yishmael, he had no other children. He had Yishmael as potentially his child. This was going to be the one. Sarah said, I'm not succeeding biologically, so I'm going to have a surrogate mother, and it's going to be Hagar. Yishmael was a pretender to being Zerah Avram. So much so that when Avram Avinu, when Hashem said to Avram, you know, I'm changing your name and Sarah's name, and you're going to have a child, Avram said, one second, how about Yishmael? What's wrong with Yishmael? Lo Yishmael yichil lefanecha. Avram Avinu, to begin with, when he had Yishmael, it was for Yishmael to be his child in his house, his main Yairish, which is why, of course, Yishmael had problems with Yitzchak. Right? He was fighting with Yitzchak over the Yerusha of Avram Avinu. He grew up for 13 years of his life thinking he was the child of Avram Avinu. Now, Johnny come lately, he's going to come and say, sorry, Charlie, you're out of here. Right? Ki b'Yitzchak yikoy l'chazara. That's what Hashem said. That's not an easy adjustment for Yishmael to make. And that's why Avram Avinu even has to be so active. And he has to send her away, and send away Yishmael, send away Hagar, send away Yishmael, in order to make very clear, this is not the way it's going to be. This is a change. And when Avram Avinu is buried, who comes to the funeral? Yitzchak and Yishmael. Now Yishmael already, you know, he stands corrected, he puts Yitzchak before him. Maybe he did tshuva, maybe he just realized his father sent him away, he should put Yitzchak in front. But he's there at the funeral, where Midian, right, Epha and Epher, we know where those other children of Keturah, they were there. When Sarah died, Avram Avinu went and took back Keturah, Hagar, and he had children, but he had these children to begin with, not as his main children. He had them, and nobody had to tell him anything. He sent them away, he gave them some parting gifts, a little turtle wax, right? And he said, you know, go away, right? He sent them off. He sent them away from his, because to begin with, Yitzchak was already there, he was already in position, he was already married to Rivka, right? And preparing to produce the next generation. This was just, La'erev al tanach yodecha. You know, Avram Avinu, he's still alive. Right? He can still produce things for the world which will have some of the quality of Avram Avinu within them. So he takes back Keturah, he has further children, but there's never a hava mina, there's never a thought that these are going to be the children. When he took Hagar originally, he was taking her as an extension of Sarah. Oh, then that's a hava mina, that there's a thought that that's going to be the children. But those children to begin with, they were almost, you know, like, I mean, I hate to use the term, but they were almost like throwaways, you know, I mean, not throwaways, but they weren't going to stay part of Avraham Avinu's family. So, they are part of Avraham Avinu, they have piece of Avraham Avinu. But when Yosef first leaves the house, he goes to a bridge with Mitzrayim that is with a very strong Avram connection. And then, in the steps of detachment, he goes to a family that has a connection to Avram, but is far less connected to Avram, and therefore far more connected to Mitzrayim. So that's the transition. Now, in the middle, you have the Seichrim. The Seichrim, the idea of the Seichrim is that, first of all, Seichrim, as Maral points out many times in the Gemara, the term Yishmaeli is used for a peddler, for a traveling taya. Right, exactly. So it's Seichrim is a Yishmaeli trait. But the difference between Yishmaelim proper, and when we call them Seichrim, is that Yishmaelim are buying it for themselves, and Seichrim are there to do business, they're there to trade. And so, first he goes to Yishmael, you know, closest from Zerah Avram, then he goes to the Seichrim, who are also Yishmaelim, but they're there to move things, they're there to make transitions. So this, since this is a transition, it goes through the hands of the Seichrim, whose job it is to make the transition. They transition him to the Midyanim, which is a step further out, and the Midyanim down to Mitzrayim. So that's just beautiful, simple thing that the Maral says, and again, Ad Kan, you find it also in the Gurarie. But then, we have the second opinion, which says that when he sold him to Mitzrayim, first he sold him to the Musya Shel Mitzrayim, to the government of Mitzrayim. And then they sold him to Potiphar. So what's that extra piece of transition? So the Maral says this is also a transition from freedom into shibut. Besides being transitioned from being in the Jewish people to being in Mitzrayim, for which these Yishmaelim, Seichrim, Midyanim steps are necessary, there's also a transition from freedom into slavery. And so, the ma'avar from that is that first he sold, but he sold to the government. And then he sold to an individual. Now, does anybody here work for the government? Okay, so you understand why working for the government isn't really slavery. Right? Okay, you want to talk about it? No, just kidding. Working for the government isn't slavery. Working for the government isn't slavery. And the Maral says two svaras. One interesting svara is that working for the government is often a distinguishing thing. Isaac b'tzarchei tzibur. The person's involved in communal needs. Right, you work for the government. You're helping society. Right, you're doing something for the improvement of the community. Right? Yeshua, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, you're coming to become a leader of the Jewish people, but you know, you're being a slave for the community. That's a very distinguished position, to be a slave for the community. And so when he was sold to the Musya Shel Mitzrayim, of course, he was now for Mitzrayim, not for the Jewish people, you know, for this period of time. But the intensity of the slavery wasn't there, because there's something in a certain sense that could be seen as communal service, as distinguishing, as positive. So that's one thing which he says. But the other thing which he says is very profound. And again, we know from government work in our time, sort of like a simplistic approach to it, but what the Maral is teaching here is also something extremely profound beyond the simple. And the idea being that what the Maral distinguishes is between having many bosses and working for one person. And when you work for the government, so many times the way people experience working for the government is that they don't really work for anybody, right? Because nobody owns the place. You know, there's so many levels of bureaucracy above you that nobody really feels any deep accountability, right? So, you know, if a fellow owns a company and his workers are producing, you know, only a certain amount of, you know, they're not producing to the max, you say, excuse me, I'm paying you. If I didn't pay you this money, I would have a bigger payoff. You know, when I'm able to make a draw on the company, I'd have more money to invest in the business. Right? If I don't see you as being super productive, I'm just taking the money out of my pocket in order to pay you. Right? By the government, nobody feels that. And therefore, the level of expectation is lower. When he goes to work for Potiphar, he's working for one person, and he's Potiphar's. Potiphar buys him, right? The pasuk says he buys him. He buys him. And now it's his personal employee. It's a whole different story. So it goes from a more relaxed level of work to a more intense level of work.
That's the transition. That's the transition into Shibud.
Correct. Yeah.
Did Klal Yisrael ever go to that level, or did they work for individuals? And it wasn't like slavery, say, America or whatever, where it was a family or whatever. More general?
State slavery in the state,
like building roads.
That's a good point. I don't think they ever went to a point where they were slaves to individuals. It was Sarim Nisim. No, for the state, and they didn't follow this pattern of being sold to an individual. It's a very nice point. It's a very nice ha'ara. Very nice ha'ara. Thank you.
They went in Darga.
Yes, Chazal described that they gradually became part of the. It's a slavery perach. That's right. That they first they were sweet talked into it. First they got paid, then the payment stopped. You know, and so on and so forth. So it was also graduated, but not this specific thing. But the deeper thing of this, besides for saying, you know, so many bosses, so nobody really looks, oh, it's not, they're not theirs, they don't have the accountability, is where the moral is the idea that echad, when you're responsible to one, then you're really responsible. Klal Yisrael's emuna is in Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. The difference between believing in the one God, in the unity of God, and serving Avodah Zarah, where there's a pantheon, where there's the God of the sun and the God of the moon and the God of the wind and the God of the rain, is not just a question of accuracy in theology. It's not just a question of whether you're worshipping the right thing or whether you're worshipping the wrong thing. When the buck stops in one place, then you understand every single aspect of your life is dependent on the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Ata yodati ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'elohim. Now, ha'elohim. Now I know that Hashem is beyond any power that exists in the universe. Right, that was Yisrael's Kabbalah Salmachul Shamayim. Mirroring our Kabbalah, Micha Mecha Be'elam Hashem. Hashem controls everything, right? Whatever they did, he could pay them back with. Right? Somehow that was an indication of Hashem as the overall power of everything in the world. Because if you are worshipping a God where there's a realm of powers that exist in the world, how absolutely dependent are you on that God? Why should I be absolutely dependent on that God? If there's a God of Mitzrayim, I can move to Bavel. If there's a God of the rains, right, so then I can, you know, somehow, I don't know, turn to the sun. Where, you know, that's what happens, right? What do your kids do to you? Huh? What do they do to you? Right, they go to mommy, they say, can I please have ice cream? Mommy says, no, you can't have ice cream. You can't have ice cream. I say, you haven't eaten your vegetables for supper for 3 weeks. No, you can't have ice cream. You start eating vegetables, you have supper. So what do? They wait till mommy's out of the room and say, daddy, can I have ice cream? Sure, no problem. Right? So they play, they exploit the fact that there are multiple possibilities. And we all do that. Right? We all do that. We do that with our work structure, we do that with our, you know, organizational structure. You know, Now, for this thing, I'm going to go to that guy. For this thing, I'm going to go to that guy. Right? When I go to the, I go to the store, you know, and I want to, you know, this. He's helpful in this matter. He's helpful in that matter. But when there's one, there's no gains. When there's one, there's mamish kabolas oil. You understand? You're absolutely and completely responsible to one. There's the difference isn't in how correct it is to be one or many and so on and so forth, whether you got the truth or you got falsehood. It is also a qualitative difference in the level of obligation and the level of service and the level of acceptance of the whole thing. Yosef, in the human realm, was experiencing the same thing. He was going from freedom to shibud, to dependence. He started off by being dependent on the many bosses called the government. And then he transitioned into shibud to one, to Potiphar. Potiphar was absolutely in charge of Yosef. Yosef was absolutely deferential to Yosef, to Potiphar. Oh, sure, Yosef was very successful, so Potiphar gave him so much responsibility and everything else. But ultimately, everything which he had from Potiphar. He had from Potiphar. Echad. Right, there's no... Huh?
Potiphar took it away from him like that.
In a second. In a second. And that's, of course, you know, that this resonates with us because the whole thing of Shibud Mitzrayim, the whole thing, not of Shibud Mitzrayim, but of the story of Yosef, ends right when we right. Yaakov Avinu is upset. He thinks that the Shekhinah isn't with him. He says, "Why did you cause me these problems?" He says to the brothers, "Remember, as we've talked about many times, that's the whole thing. They think, okay, other people can make things happen, and Hashem's upset. What are you talking about? They did it. I'm doing it, and I'm doing it to bring the Mashiach." And that's why when Yaakov Avinu discovers the truth, what's he busy saying while Yosef is kissing him? He's saying Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Right? Because as long as you think you're in a world where Hashem does most things, you know, like Rav Huttner Zichron Levracha used to say, Ruba de Ruba de Eibishter Fir de Welt. You know, mostly the Rebbein Hashem runs the world. He would say it sort of sarcastically. You know, it's not Ruba de Ruba. It's not mostly. It's wholly, completely. That's Kabbalah Samach Shemayim. That's when Yaakov, oh my gosh, God isn't everything here. This is not like I'm living in a world where I'm forsaken. God isn't everything. Echad is a whole different story. And so for Yosef to face the Echad of Potiphar was a whole different story than the Dimusa Shel Mitzrayim, than the broader government of Mitzrayim. Okay, anybody needs a little reinforcement, our government workers will be happy to explain exactly the lumbus behind this. You know what I'm talking about.
For everyone,
huh?
No.
For everyone and for no one. Yeah. Okay. So next time we will continue with Peretz Yud Beis.
That's all.
Pack it off.
Are they Howard?